You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
We have moved into the final quarter of 2024 with many stock market indices worldwide at or near all-time highs. And suddenly, chipping in, as well as the interest rates coming down and inflation abating, suddenly we've got China coming to the party as well. It's recently been the 75th anniversary of the formation of the People's Republic of China, and they have almost symbolically marked it with a stimulus package which has set China equities and other asset classes on fire. With me now is Philip Saunders from 91 in London, speaking to us from Mexico City. Just briefly tell us what exactly the Chinese authorities have done, Philip.
So, what we've seen is increasing concerns about the growth rate in China being sluggish. We've seen Chinese government bond yields sort of collapse to yields of about 2%. China's undergoing a very, challenging sort of baton change from the old economy, which was very property dominated, to a newer economy that basically is not reliant on property and the build out of infrastructure to drive growth. It's a tricky transition. And up until now, they've tried to avoid resorting to significant stimulus. They've obviously cut interest rates, which is appropriate in a semi-disinflationary sort of kind of environment. And the stock market basically had the odd sort of rebound, but sunk to extremely low levels earlier on. And finally, you're seeing a sort of much more significant response, which basically consists not just of cutting rates, because there's no point in just pushing on a string if people don't want to borrow because property prices are sort of being sustained at sort of, at overvalued levels, which has clearly affected consumer confidence, because 96% of Chinese are property owners, or it's significant, their property is their savings as well, and so therefore that has a very significant bearing on consumer sentiment and consumer spending, which has been misfiring during the sort of current recovery.
Okay, it all sounds very good, and it's been the most astonishing rally that we've seen in China equities, and as I said earlier on, other asset classes as well. Is it sustainable? Is this the solution? Can they build on this in a meaningful way? Can the economy start to rebuild itself? Can the property market be free of the shackles of not just empty buildings, but empty towns?
Yeah, well, I think that, what you've got to do is step back and say, right, what has the sort of build out of property achieved in China? Well, it's accommodated a most extraordinary move from the provinces, if you like, to the cities. This has happened without sort of sprawling favelas, which has been the experience in many other emerging economies. So in a way, basically, it served its purpose, but inevitably things got carried away and there was overcapacity and so forth. And that's exactly what's been overhanging markets. And China now needs, obviously, a new growth driver. So if you look at other parts of China, there's the new economy in China, i.e. electric vehicles, the manufacturing, the dominant players in solar power and solar panels, basically wind turbines, etc. So you've seen sort of huge growth in these pretty sophisticated sectors that's happening under the surface. But the narrative has been very much focused on, what's been going wrong and the structural challenges that they face in terms of actually avoiding a more deflationary kind of environment. In fact, the Chinese economy has been growing. You wouldn't think it if you actually listen to some of the narrative, particularly in the West.
Yes.
And one of the reasons for such a sharp rebound was really positioning in markets. Basically the world and his dog was short Chinese assets where they could be short Chinese assets. And so when you're going to move this violent, it typically speaks to more about investor positioning in markets than necessarily fundamentals. However, that being said, quite often inflection points are violent. And so probably the low is in. We now have talk about the Beijing put. You remember the Fed put?
Yes.
Well, now we have the Beijing put. And enough was enough. And they're sort of clearly in the process of drawing a line. So you can now borrow at 2% and invest in high yielding Chinese equities, and which seems to be, you know, potentially a pretty good thing to do. So they want to actually draw a line under the equity market. And they also want to recognize that growth is unbalanced, and they need to do something about consumer sentiment. And so this is why it's not just a monetary package or a series of monetary measures. It basically, as we see it roll out, it's about basically fixing local authority financing, which is another one of the sort of big problem areas, and also doing things to address the issue of consumer sentiment. Will it succeed ultimately? I think it's, you know, we've seen this before, actually. If you look at the experience of Chinese equity markets going back to the global financial crisis, we've seen a series of times when there were concerns about economic growth, and they've come in and they've stimulated aggressively, and you've seen significant moves in the market, 100, 150% moves, but they haven't been sustained. And so this might well turn out to be one of those. I rather suspect there's possibly a little bit more to it this time, but time will tell.
This is what I was going to ask you, Philip. It's obviously very, very good for China and Chinese asset classes in the short term. Hopefully, it will extend to the medium and the long term. Is it good for the world? Is it good, for example, for a country that produces commodities? Because commodity prices, which will already hopefully be boosted by lower interest rates in the developed world and therefore the lower dollar, etc. But will the China story, if it develops, which you suggest that it might, there might be more substance this time, will it help the global economy as well?
Yes, I mean, I think the answer to that, Lindsay, is it will a bit to some extent, but you're going to have a much less commodity intensive complexion to growth in China. So it might be good for food producers, because China's obviously a massive food importer. But if it's not about putting up lots of new apartments, which I doubt it is, because I don't think they even want that, then, you know, demand for some of the more traditional commodities is not suddenly going to take off again. So you could see, you know, obviously demand for something like copper, which, you know, where there's a sort of global shortage, you know, having the Chinese come back into that market, you know, it's clearly going to have an effect on the price. You know, is it really going to radically transform the fortunes of iron ore? Maybe not so much.
Okay. Final question. I don't know if you've had a chance to sit down with your team at 91 in London and say, okay, this is a bit of a game changer, or potentially a game changer. Shall we relook at our China strategy? Have you done that yet?
Well, yes. I mean, we're continually reviewing strategy, and we tend to basically have a focus on medium-term strategy and also short-term cyclical environment. And we have been building exposure to Chinese equities, which has been a pretty sort of unpopular thing to do, simply because that there's never been a better time to build a portfolio of high-quality Chinese equities, where the earnings are progressively sort of growing at a pretty healthy clip, and where, you know, the price earnings multiples are ridiculously low. And, you know, that's not necessarily going to actually result in instant gratification if you've just got an investment time horizon of a few months. But if you're looking at a sort of 3 to 5 year period, you know, even after the rebound we've seen, then I think, you know, basically you can still build a portfolio of, really attractive exposures within the China market. Now, you can then go back to say, well, but China isn't investable, and, you know, they're communists, etc., and you can never make money and so forth. I think that that's wildly exaggerated and was obviously more than fully in the price.
Yes, that theory was debunked quite a while ago. But Philip, thank you very much for your analysis. Quite exciting times, actually. Philip Saunders is from 91 in London, speaking to us from Mexico City. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors, and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.